Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, everybody. This is Lynn Kerrigan, acting as host of this rowdy team this week.
Wait a minute. Did you say rowdy team or reality team?
No, I said rowdy.
Oh, okay. I thought so. Thank you.
Thank you. This rowdy team. So I'm up today for trying to moderate this immoderate group, although we do try. We want to be helpful to you and consider all the things that you need to be thinking about as the national elections are coming up and other news of interest. And boy, this was the week that was, wasn't it? I'm going to start out just sort of giving a shout out to John Lewis, who was part of my childhood, my adolescence, as I grew up in Atlanta. And in 1963, I remember him at the Washington March making that speech at Martin Luther King's behest, where he said, "We are not wanting to wait for our freedom. We don't want it to come gradually. We want to be free now." With that serrated voice that cut right through to the core. We'll come back to John later. I have some quotes from him at the end of the show. But for me, I was amazed at this week with Ruthie Ginsburg's cancer coming back, all kinds of strange natural phenomenon, giant hornets coming in from Asia that are being trapped in Bellingham by little traps full of sake and orange juice, little mimosas. You know, the polar bears are suffering. People are trapping kangaroos, finding them on the highway, and they're escaping from horse barns. At the same time, we're trying to deal with federal troops in our cities, trying to stop protest and the violence that is somehow accompanying that in Portland and next Chicago. So we have a lot to talk about today. With me in the studio today is our usual miscreants, our cast of characters, Bruce Hallman, our bonded historian. Bruce, what's up next in your history links?
We're actually continuing to do the series of interviews with Voice of Vachon. We've done over 50 in 2 weekends. We've got 2 more weekends coming up, and this Thursday we will be at Granny's to catch the Granny's crowd.
Hooray for Granny's.
And on Friday and Saturday we'll be at Thriftway. And then on Sunday from 1 to 3, we'll be at IGA. So we're trying to broaden the sort of demographics of this interview process, a storytelling process. And then we're looking at setting up some community storytelling. So areas where like Ellisport and Dockton and Burton and Tahlequah and the North End and possibly others, where we can sort of prearrange for a couple hours for people to come in and tell their stories. So we've done over 50 interviews of the Vachon Be Prepared Medical Reserve Corps, Emergency Operations Center. We've done over 50 community interviews, and we're going to continue to do that. So the goal is to get around 200, 250 interviews. So that's on the agenda. And then this week I had an article with my friend Steve McDonald about whether we should rename Maury Island. Maury Island was named after William F. Lewis Morris Maury, who was a Union naval officer with the Wilkes Expedition. And so the island was named in his honor. He resigned his commission and became a Confederate naval officer at the beginning of the Civil War, and actually captained the CSS Georgia, which was one of the most successful of the Confederate raiders. So we have an island named after a Confederate officer who was basically a traitor to the United States and was a supporter of slavery. So there's a sense that we may want to think about renaming Maury Island. And we will have a suggestion. There's a great Maury that we can name it after, so we can pull a King County and change the name without changing the name. So.
Maury Wills.
That's one of the options. I'm
totally behind that.
It's called a contronym.
Yeah, Maury Popoff is another one.
That's what I was thinking.
If we can...
So that's my world.
Maury Island.
I'm sorry?
If we can free Maury Island,
yes, Maury Island. That has to be first.
Yes, tear right. out the portage. Fill.
Clear keep that portage out of there.
Keep right. the orchestra because they're great. They're fabulous.
Yes.
And you're listening to the voice of Michael Shook. Happy birthday, Michael.
Thank you.
Grateful you're here and with us. And if I weren't so shy, I'd burst into song, but I didn't set that up yet. So I will just say happy birthday and that I'm going to see you later because I have a present for you to bring by.
Alrighty.
And hoping that you're having a good time in your garden and in your planting of trees. Anything up for you this week that is burning for you or going on that we should know about in the beginning of this session?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, just the usual stuff, you know, contemplating how to tear out the portage fill. I've dismissed the notion of dynamite. It would do the job in a hurry, but it's a little too hard to control it. You've got homes there in the area, and I don't want to disturb things like that. So
let's say they banned fireworks.
Exactly. Well, and the noise. No. So,
but Michael, you could get a hold of that community down in Oregon that blew up the whale. Those guys know how to handle dynamite.
Oh,
perfectly. Yeah.
And that was Truman O'Brien, our mood modulating engineer and pilot. Thank you for piloting us through all of this once again, Truman.
Thanks.
What's up from your end besides thinking of whales to be
whales to be blown up? Well, I would just throw out that, and along with Bruce recording the COVID stories, which is really a wonderful project, by the way, and the Voice of Ashon is really proud to be a part of. We're also having our summer raffle, which is the shopping spree at Thriftway.
Who's we? You mean Voice of Ashon?
Voice of Ashon, yes, Voice okay. of Ashon, and the Heritage Museum. We're partnering with them this year on this as a fundraiser, and it's one of our major fundraisers for the year. So we really encourage folks to go out and buy an opportunity to go on a shopping spree at Thriftway. Tickets are $20 each, or you can get five for the price of four. So I just want to
splurging at Thriftway for months. Isn't everybody?
Oh,
where
yeah.
else can you shop?
And one of the nice things about it is on the raffle ticket, there's a box you can check that you would give that $2,000 shopping spree to the Vashon Food Bank.
Yep.
So all right.
That's an option.
There you go.
A lot of people are interested in.
So. That happened last year. The winner last year donated, and I think it was like just a little bit over $2,000 worth of groceries. So that's a huge benefit.
That is a lot if you're interested. Groceries. Yeah. What a great thing to be involved in. Thank you, Truman.
You bet.
And sitting next to Truman in our Gene Bosch studio in lovely downtown Vashon is our Real Talk host coming up after our show, Susan McCabe. What's up for Real Talk, Susan?
Good morning, everybody. Today I am going to talk with Vashon Health District's new superintendent, Eric Jensen, whose charge is to try and find us a new provider for our clinic in the midst of COVID, et cetera. We're going to find out if he actually has a cape.
That's good.
He'll need one.
Yeah.
Yes, he will need one. Well, that sounds like it's going to be really interesting and very important. Thank you for doing that.
Hope
and lastly, go ahead, Michael. Somebody said something. Truman?
First thing in to say, hope he has a cape and a mask.
And a mask.
Yes.
And that was the voice of Kevin Jones, our representative from individual Vashon, who is taking on a wonderful project of connecting with the voters in Georgia. Kevin, can you talk to us about that for a little bit?
Hey, we are connecting with voters all over the country, and our focus is to have people register and also to have people sign up to vote by mail so they can vote safely on November 3rd. And we actually, on Thursdays now at 3 o'clock, our plan is every week between now and 105 days from now, which is Election Day, is to have the Resistance Cafe. It's online. You can join us to make phone calls, write postcards, send text messages like I was doing today to unregistered voters in Georgia. So, yeah, hopefully people will have a chance to participate and enjoy some camaraderie and some political activism, voter engagement.
Man, that's fabulous. Kevin, how do they join you online to be involved in that?
Let's see. You can either email me at kevin@indivisiblevashon.org, or you can just go to indivisiblevashon.org and click on info. The info button will connect voters to us, or just info@indivisiblevashon.org. Lots of ways.
Thank you so much. Well, you know, for me, it's been a really an emotional week. I really just kind of want to go back to saying that I thought that the death of John Lewis, you know, was just tragic for our country. I think that his conscience and his powerful, simple, loving, dignified voice, which has been active throughout 1963 all the way to the present, you know, will be missed. And it seems really kind of ironic that here we are in the midst of, you know, one of the biggest movements in all of our history, you know, perhaps bigger than the protests and the riots that broke out in the 60s, you know, for Black Lives Matter. And then there's the federal reaction, you know, to that, which has really gotten very violent, looking at the long-term, I don't know, the persistence of the Black Lives Matter. I am so proud that they are being persistent and in the streets every day. And yet there's also an element of anarchy and violence and, you know, property destruction that, you know, certainly played out badly in Seattle with some of the killings that happened in our protest area. And now, you know, there's action down in Portland as we speak, trying to, quote, protect property and the federal buildings and federal monuments. And I'm just wondering what people are thinking and feeling about all of that. Can you talk about that a little?
If I can jump in a couple of things. I think important to remember in 1973, John Lewis was 23 years old when he made that speech.
In 63, yeah.
Yeah, in 63. He was 23 years old. So it's interesting to think about who are the 23-year-olds in the Black Lives Matter movement who are making speeches and making public statements. And where will they be in 50 years? And where will we be as a country in 50 years? So it's a sort of one of those time stamp kinds of things that you can think about. And it's also important not to sort of buy into the rhetoric of the suppression of dissent and the suppression of things like the Seattle no-go zone for police. You know, there were two murders there during the time that there were no police in there. But during a similar period of time, there would have been three or four murders with police there. So it's important to sort of step back and look at the perspective of that and sort of realize that what was going on in Seattle was not necessarily a negative. People lost their lives as a result of shootings, but shootings in that area take place every week, even with police there. So it's really that sense of what do we want the police to be, and what do we see the role of policing in modern America and in the future of America and being. There's a fascinating sort of article in the New Yorker this week by Jill Lepore, talking about the emergence of American policing, and American policing beginning in the late 19th and early 20th century developed on a military model and one of suppression rather than one of peacekeeping. And so there's an important debate going on right now. And unfortunately, it gets sort of positioned as defund the police, when in reality, it's not defunding the police, but it's putting the funds into the appropriate people to respond to appropriate situations. I mean, you don't want an armed police officer going up a ladder getting a kitten out of a tree. I mean, there's other people that can do that. You know, you don't want a police officer going to handle a drug addict when there are other trained professionals available to do that. So it's not a matter of defunding the police. It's a matter of allocating resources to the proper people who are trained to respond to the situation. So important not to jump into the rhetoric of what people are talking about and to step back and keep that perspective.
Truman.
Yeah, you know, I was in Europe in the late 60s. And during that time, the bobbies in London, the London police, did not carry firearms at all. They had a nightstick is all they had. And I think that's evolved till today, where I think the bobbies are now armed. I could be wrong, but I know that, of course, it was a very different time, but that was a time of protest. The Vietnam War was going on and all of that. And those guys seem to work okay. I mean, that of course, the Brits are a little bit different, culture than us. But I find that interesting. And the other thing that I heard, when people started talking about cut the budget in half, I said, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I was adamantly opposed to that and still a little bit so. But somebody pointed out, as you did, Bruce, that, you know, you don't need to have an armed cop to do traffic duty, you know, to stop a speeder and issue a ticket or to be out in the middle of the street guiding traffic, which they do, you know, around accidents and that sort of thing. So, you know, maybe there's some money to be saved there.
Kevin.
I may have mentioned it on the show before, but I think that it's helpful if we move past a belief or a mindset that every problem looks like a nail, so every solution needs a hammer. And I totally agree, Truman. You know, I talked to some voters who said, defund the police, that's crazy. And it's really, of course, a redistribution of funds, so that we can have a more balanced and maybe a higher level of expertise and experience responding, as Bruce is saying, you know, to different things as they come up. I will say that King County today is voting. Our King County Council members are voting today on Ordinance 2020-0231, which would actually change the responsibilities for who allocates the functions of the sheriff. Right now it's up to the sheriff. This ordinance would transfer that to the county council. And you might say, I'd hate to have the county council in charge of policing, but apparently that is the only way that we would be able to reallocate funding, interestingly enough. So we may have a dilemma here, but if we believe that this is an important shift, then that ordinance is something we'd want to have passed. And definitely contact, you know, your council member, Joe McDermott, and let him know your thoughts on it.
What was that bill number again, or the reference?
Yeah, it's an ordinance 2020-0231, but it's basically allow the redistribution of funds from policing to other social services. And Joe will certainly know that what's coming. I don't know when they're voting on it, so it may now be in the past, but it's on the docket today.
Susan, did I see your hand waving?
Well, I'm agreeing with everyone. I I see it, you know, once again, it's been sensationalized so that the idea of defunding the police is becoming a rallying cry to prohibit the notion of reasonable reallocation of resources to other organizations and other other types of activity, like social services, like mental health. And I would love to know exactly what it's going to take to do that. Is it just a movement of funds, or I suspect that it also, with that movement of funds, requires some rebuilding of infrastructure in those organizations. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it is also not something that should be killed by sensationalist rhetoric. And it just makes a whole lot of sense. As we look at Portland, where policing, I guess the police there have kind of backed off while the federal troops take over. And I don't think it's alarmist for us to be really reacting strongly to that infusion of federal firepower over our citizens. It's completely inappropriate and definitely a movement toward fascism. Look at the history of other countries, folks, like Germany. I also heard, and I don't know because there's so much fake news around, that this is true, but that the federal government is sponsoring a school in Chicago for vigilantes. And I don't know if that's true at all. People who can basically take the law in their own hands. Has anybody heard anything about that?
Yeah, that's not a false rumor, Susan. That Immigration and Customs Enforcement (ICE) has undertaken a program to train civilians to spot illegal immigrants and. I'm not sure now if they've empowered, I don't think they're deputizing them. I don't think they can go and make arrests or that kind of thing, but they are going through people who come forward and volunteer. And I don't know what the training consists of, but yeah, that's a real thing. It's a dangerous thing to say the least. Going back to Portland, and the whole notion of defunding, I mean, to me, it's kind of all part of a piece of a larger picture there of, there is a very small group of young people. I saw some video of the usual black clad, I don't know, probably in their 20s or something, smashing windows in a Starbucks or something. And it's unfortunate because the mass of the protesters are being as peaceful as they can.
Right.
But this gives the forces that want to bring in federal troops a perfect incentive, a perfect excuse to say, well, look, they can't control these people. And so we've got to send in the feds and they can swing this other stuff around in Chicago and other places too. So.
Kevin,
I just
and then Susan.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and I am unclear on the legality of this. Is it legal for President Trump to send troops to a city that does not want them? And is it legal for it is legal? Truman's nodding his head. And is it legal for those troops to arrest people without clarifying charges and taking them away? And what has happened to those people, Truman?
Yeah, no. What's legal is if they're there to protect federal property. That's the only place that they're legal. They can't go out into the street and arrest people who are not actively, you know, threatening federal property, and that includes buildings, monuments, blah blah blah. So
and
yeah.
Not give their names, well, and not disclose, you know, where they're being taken.
And one of the things that they said in Portland is that when these people are picked up and taken to this location, as soon as they ask, they demand their rights, they're released. So I think they're using just as scare tactics. But the one thing I wanted to question, did you notice in the in this latest protest in Seattle, there were actually two groups, and they the news people reported on this. They said, well, we have one group that's moving this direction. And then this other group came in, and they were really organized. They had baseball bats. They had all kinds of stuff where they were really raising a ruckus. And they are the ones who caused the problem, not the one group who was, quote, quote, protesting ICE. But this other group who joined them are the ones that were causing the problem. Kevin.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Truman. I saw that as well. You know, this whole thing, when it first came up, maybe the historian in me, I went back and read my Churchill about March 12th, 1938. And that is the date, if I recall correctly, that Austria fell to the Nazis. And the whole pretext of how that was done, of course, is that Germany had people living in Austria who started raising all kinds of angst. And Germany said, we have to go and protect our citizens, our Germans living in Austria. We need to move in and bring in troops to make sure people are safe. Mm-hmm. So you could see how, right, you can play this out with certain actors who create a disturbance, and then the feds, of course, have to move in and quell things. So it's very disturbing that we see these things coming again in our country, which we should hopefully never see. And I agree, we need to speak out and against it.
I wanted to say two things quickly. One, in terms of the reallocation of funds for the police, it reminds me of the time I was working at Harborview, in which the ER split into two separate functions because the people with physical trauma, who provide the bulk of the patients coming into Harborview, were, you know, being sidelined for because of the volume of mental health and drug, ODs and all kinds of other social issues were also flooding in the doors at the same time. So they basically had decided to split into two emergency rooms, or two sections of the emergency room at Harborview, in which case, you know, you have more expertise available quicker for each kind of problem. And it has worked very well. And I think that the other thing that I want to say is that I watched Rick Steves' new program on the rise of fascism in Europe, which I think, you know, did a great job talking about what exactly is fascism and talking about, you know, some of the parallels here. He was not very pointed at all. He just let the story tell itself in terms of the comparisons. But, you know, if you're writing down some of the things that he said happened very quickly, you know, in Europe, was it went from kind of attacks on journalists and scientists and free speech and all the emotional oratory and rhetoric and the cult of the strong man and the kind of national exceptionalism and the promise of a master race and a lot of other sort of simple solutions to very complex problems and a lot of propaganda about what the state could do. And then finally, scapegoats, you know, with the Jewish population there. And I just, you know, watch a lot of parallels, and I watch a lot of the focus and target of the right on immigrants, you know, being scapegoated for a lot of the other kinds of problems that, you know, America is having. And I guess I want to think with y'all about, you know, I know that parallel and the caution against fascism came up very early on when Trump was elected, and people were kind of outraged, you know, that they were painted as fascists, the people who voted for Trump. And yet, that's not my, you know, remembrance. I guess my concern was the tactics, you know, that the federal government is now using. You know, have any of y'all seen that? Do you have thoughts about kind of the rise of fascism?
I missed who you said it's whose series it was. Did you say
it was Rick Steves?
Rick Steves. Oh,
yes.
On
yes.
what platform?
It's been running on Channel 12, I think. It might be 9, but I think it's Channel 12. But I saw it night before last, I think, you know, in its usual kind of prime time, you know, 9 o'clock or so spot on public broadcasting. It was quite good.
We've seen, it's interesting you mentioned Churchill and March 12, 1938, of the pretense of going in to help citizens. Because, I mean, Putin, I heard that and I was like, bang. There's Vladimir Putin lifted that page and used it very effectively in Crimea. And I mentioned in the last few years, my Latvian friend who's first generation here, and she's terrified that Putin's going to do the same thing in the Baltic states there in Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania, because there's a huge number of Russian citizens there from the old days of the Soviet Union. And now Trump and I have to say, not just Trump. Cynthia and I were talking about this, and there's so much of this that the scary part is that Trump is sort of this symptom to me. He's like the figurehead, but I don't see Republicans challenging him. Even now, there's a few mild, oh gosh, wear your mask. I mean, Mitch McConnell finally said, we need to trust Dr. Fauci and we need to wear masks. It's like, wow, really going out on a limb there, aren't you, Mitch? That's a really bold, brave stand there. You know, these guys don't care about anything but power. And if this works to their advantage to disperse these different federal agencies to different large cities around the country, especially ones led by Democratic mayors, then they're all for it. It's very unnerving.
Susan and then Kevin.
You know, it really smacks of the seeds of civil war. And I don't take that lightly, and I don't think any of us should take it lightly. And they've had this sustained campaign, as Lynn brought up, on journalism, which has succeeded in many ways. Journalists, people don't know who to trust because the Fox News types of journalist media continue to propound the fascist or the Trumpian line, along which is supported by all those folks, Mitch McConnell and the cowards in the Senate. And so people don't know what to believe. And journalism is the bastion of free speech in this country, supposedly. Science and intelligence have been denigrated since long before Trump. It's not cool to be smart. You're a nerd, et cetera, et cetera. It's time to get smart, America, and pay attention. There are quality journalists out there. And yes, it requires that you read. And science does know something. They don't have all the answers, and they're the first ones to admit it. Anyway, I'm on my soapbox.
Thank you. No, you're not. I think you're in the middle of a very important conversation. And I've been reading about the New York Times. You know, there's kind of a brush fire going on there about whether they have liberal bias in their questions about whether to have retracted or not endorsed the decision to publish Tom Cotton's op-ed that talked about send in the military to these rowdy cities. And, you know, even the New York Times, a kind of a bastion of liberalism, is now being attacked for kind of publishing something that was an alternative viewpoint. And then they got a lot of trash for having done that, you know, published Tom Cotton's perspective. And then they've gotten trouble for trying to renounce that. And so they're really having to parse out, you know, what does being liberal mean in America? What does being, you know, overly oppressive mean in America? Kevin.
The other crossover of, you know, where is my media coming from is thank goodness for Chris Wallace on Fox News.
That's just what I was going to bring up.
The
other thing I'll say is, you know, Churchill was anti-fascist, right? Churchill's Antifa. didn't really like Mussolini, supporting Hitler. The other thing I'll say is that for our reader who has time, or listener who has time, again, How Democracies Die and its companion, Hitler, A Study in Tyranny, written by Bullock, are two books to really read back to back, because it shows you not only what was done in the late 30s in Germany, but what are the indicators in today's America. And the parallels are absolutely frightening, Susan. I totally agree. We need to be aware. We need to raise our voice. But also we need to be educated. So those books are tremendous assets to help us understand what's going on.
Can you give those titles again, please, yeah. Kevin?
How Democracies Die and Hitler, A Study in Tyranny.
Thank you.
And let me add another title to that. It's very, very important to this moment. It's by Bullock also. It's called The Democrat and the Dictator. And it was a profile of Adolf Hitler and Franklin D. Roosevelt and the way those two leaders responded to the same kind of crisis of the 1920s and 1930s. And one, FDR, responded in a democratic fashion with the New Deal and with programs to sort of approach the problems of the Depression, the problems of working class people, Social Security, the very first inklings of a Medicare system, those kind of things. Adolf Hitler, responding to the same issues, but responded in a very different way and went the way of sort of nationalism, Germany first and racial superiority. And so we're at that kind of crossroads today, very similar kinds of crossroads in terms of how we as America are gonna respond to the crisis, not only of COVID, but of Black Lives Matter and of sort of this idea of sort of reconceptualizing the police. So very interesting sort of a way to look at how leadership can respond to crises.
Thank you for those titles. I'm interested in them. And as our time winds down, we've got about 6 or 8 more minutes now. I want to head toward a couple of hopeful things. I was really impressed with Nicholas Kristof's editorial in the New York Times this Sunday. It was a long article, actually. It was in their review, but he talked a lot about how this administration is sort of the perfect foil for another rebirth of some better days ahead for America. And he was talking, he had some interesting statistics that he listed. He talked about 89% favor higher taxes on the wealthy to help reduce poverty. Talked about 88% of our population believe masks should be worn at least some of the time. 84% trust scientists, 67% think we're not doing enough to address climate change. He quoted 60% support for Black Lives Matter and that there were 20 million people participating in this movement. And so, it was really a reminder that, Susan, as you mentioned, there's so much sensationalism and fear-mongering going on everywhere, in the press and everywhere else, that, we have to figure out a way to stay focused and constructive and positive, which leads me to Joe Biden and his new building platform, I guess. Building in the sense of, it's being promoted these days. I'm hearing more about it than I did before. And I wonder if y'all have seen much about it. What I read was that he's naming his platform Build Back Better with a focus on job creating and an increase in American manufacturing and trying to do things like increase climate change activity and the federal minimum wage and have a public option for health care and easier access to college. Thus, that's kind of what I know, a very centrist platform, not really as progressive as some of the young people wanted, but incorporating some elements out of the Green New Deal and building on the Affordable Care Act. What do y'all think about that platform, and, you know, how can we work toward, you know, shifting this country from, you know, the far right to a more centrist, if not leftist, more progressive opportunity for people? Okay. Michael?
The numbers that you cited there, and I did go on, thanks for that link, and read that. I like what he brought up about the silent majority that Nixon relied upon. And I thought, well, those are some really good numbers. If those polls are accurate at all, there's an enormous number of people who want these things. People want to see their communities work. They want to see things succeed. And I think when they're given some leadership, I think people are willing to jump in and help do the work. And we're seeing that with the 60% of folks who not only support Black Lives Matter, but if that's accurate at all, that 20 million approximately are actively participating in that movement, that's a significant portion of our adult population. I mean, really significant. So I think these things give me great hope. If we can get the vote out and get people motivated to really make a mandate, as you've talked about, Kevin, there's a great opportunity here to level the playing field a little bit and make people feel like, hey, I don't need to give in to despair or destruction. I've got some hope for my future. I can do something.
Yeah. Yeah. The nature of the American political system is you have to carry the middle. You know, Democrats often forget that. Republicans never do until now. Republicans right now are sort of abandoning the middle, at least under Trump, the Trump Republicans. And so if Biden's smart, you know, that kind of moderate centrist, you know, with progressive element campaign could well put him in the White House and well end the Trump era in the United States.
Kevin.
And I appreciate, Michael, the mention of a mandate. I've got a lot of things I could say about that and so on. But I guess let me just say a couple different things. You know, an election is like a hiring process. And if we're hiring the person who's going to run the country, and no application for a job is perfect, right? They all need to be trained. We need to pick the person we can work with. We need to pick the person who will eventually do the job that we want done. And I think it's important to realize we don't need the person who's on a pedestal. We need the person who will do the work and do it well. The last thing I'd like to say very briefly is at the Heritage Museum on the front porch, a friend of mine established a John Lewis Memorial with a bulletin board and a photograph. And so if people want to stop by and just leave a memento to the late, great John Lewis, we have that opportunity right here on Vashon.
Thank you. And as our time runs out, let me end with some quotes by John Lewis. Do not get lost in a sea of despair. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. Our struggle is not the struggle of a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is the struggle of a lifetime. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble. Never give up. Never give in.
Words I want to thank. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank John.
Thank
Lewis
you, Lynn. Thank you, listeners.
Service. And thank y'all all for another wonderful week.